In this hour, we bring the candidates running for the Democratic nomination for the 137th District Assembly seat, a seat that had previously been held for many years by David Gant, who is retiring. The primary, of course, is June 23rd, and many New Yorkers are voting by mail before that date. And our goal is to bring the candidates together for all statewide and federal races that are going to appear on your ballots, whether they are in primary or special elections, Republicans, Democrats. Now, there are four Democrats vying for this office, and we have been doing our best to arrange the schedules as best we can. And we have two of the candidates running for that seat that has, again, been held by David Gant for so long. So let me go ahead and welcome them now, and they're going to have a chance to speak at length about what they'd like to do in this office. Damon Meeks is with us. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Evan.
And welcome to Silvano Orsi. Welcome back to the program, Silvano.
How you doing, Evan? Thank you very much.
Well, let me start by asking both of you to tell the listeners a little bit about your background, what it is that convinced you to run for this seat. Damon, I'll start with you.
Okay, my background, born and raised here in the city of Rochester, and humble beginnings, lived over on Reed Park, and from there transitioned to Olean Projects. I currently live in the Southwest in the 19th Ward. And as it relates to running for this office, I'm just a servant leader. And, you know, as you see, my tagline is just what I live by, a servant leader committed to people. On yesterday, I was making phone calls, calling undecided voters and talking to them and basically finding out what are some of their concerns and if they had questions for me that may possibly help sway them one way or the other. And I spoke to a woman who lives over off of Chalai Avenue, and she had a number of complaints regarding things in her neighborhood. Also, the fact that the grass in the yard next door was about 3 feet high. And I treat elders in particular like my mom. If I'm talking to mom and she says, hey, Damon, the grass next door is 3 feet high, it's ridiculous, I'm not going to waste time saying, okay, let me call the city, let me file a complaint and wait for someone to come out here and do it. I'm going to get over there and get it done. And, you know, I just want to shout out Ms. Dolores. I stopped over and seen her first thing this morning. We went over there, cut the grass, and, you know, just said, hey, Ms. Dolores, you know, we're concerned about what's going on here. Also, the young men that's been on the corner and engaged in different activity, I've had conversations with them as it relates to the community. So we have to be engaged, and we have to commit to talking to people on the issues and moving forward and supporting them and being that change that the community needs. So we get it done by working together and supporting one another. And that's my background, and that's what I will continue to do as your next representative of the 137th Assembly District.
That's Damon Meeks. We should mention Ernest Flagler Mitchell was going to join us but had an emergency and could not join us this hour. Ann Lewis did not respond to the latest invitations. Silvano Orsi, tell us about yourself and why you're running.
Okay, I'll give you a bit of my background. I'm a community activist and a community advocate. People know me for I've been fighting for community issues for years in the Lyle Avenue corridor and in the town of Gates. I've actually accomplished things in the town of Gates and the Lyle corridor. I hold two law degrees, one from the Boston University School of Law, and one from the University of London, Queen Mary. I'm trained as a lawyer. I know what it means to write legislation and to pass legislation, and I've actually written legislation that's been presented to Joe Morelli concerning community benefit districts. I've actually written legislation and trying to get that sponsored, and I know what it entails to be a legislator. And as I said, I'm an activist who is involved in the Lyle corridor very heavily. And I run major events for the community in the town of Gates, helping promote business commerce, giving opportunities to vendors and to gas stations and to hotels with the Little Italy Festival, and increasing business opportunities and actually accomplishing things in the town of Gates where I live. I've lived there for about 30 years. And I'm a resident of Gates, and I believe a Gates resident should represent the town of Gates, which is three quarters of the district we're trying to compete for here. And in the city of Rochester, I'm the founder of Rochester's Little Italy Historic District. It's an official city neighborhood. I founded that last year on June 2nd, and I'm very proud of that. It's a very inclusive effort to revitalize the Lyle Corridor which is plagued by drugs and crime and violence, and it needs to be addressed. And I'm also working with the people on the Clinton Corridor to address things over by the La Marqueta area and to be rid of the to work on getting rid of the open drug trade that's happening down there and the opioid crisis. I'm attacking these issues as a community servant, and folks know me. My record speaks for itself and what I've been trying to accomplish for the community and revitalizing those two vital corridors of the city of Rochester and what I've been trying to do in the town of Gates.
So let me ask you a little bit about a note that you passed along to us this morning, and I'll ask you and Damon to respond to this. You said that you're especially concerned as we head for the weekend with the state of businesses, protection from police. And can you tell me more about what you're seeing there?
I've had a very frenetic morning. I've been getting a lot of calls from the businesses in the Lyle Corridor. They've been asking me to contact the neighborhood service centers. And what's going on is the city sent code enforcement this morning down to the Flatiron Cafe and to the Rochester Pawnbrokers, which are two high-impact businesses down there in the Lyle Corridor, liquor store and pawn shops. These are what's being rioted and looted right now. And these are the targets for the looters. And there's a big protest planned for 1 p.m. And the businesses asked me to what I could do to help them out with the code enforcement issues. They have cars parked in front of their windows and their doors, which have been there for about 3 days, that are blocking the entrances of these businesses to protect them so that the looters can't get in. And I guess the neighborhood service center down there from the city of Rochester is worried about optics and sent down the code enforcement officers to break the chops of these businesses and tell them to remove these cars because somebody with a wheelchair said they couldn't get through for handicapped access on the sidewalk. I called the police. The police told me that basically they gave me a horrible response. Lieutenant Waldo in the Northwest Quadrant Neighborhood Service Center said that we're basically on our own and we have to protect our own businesses down there, and that they couldn't respond and bring a car down there. I thought that was a horrible answer to give these businesses who pay very high taxes, commercial taxes, which includes police protection. It's a terrible answer to tell somebody you're on your own and you have to protect yourself. I think that's terrible. And it just shows poor planning. We're not ready for these kind of situations in that area. And this is, again, two high-impact businesses, a pawn shop and a liquor store. And the police told me, Mr. Waldo told me that Lieutenant Waldo, who's in charge of that neighborhood service center there, he's a crime prevention officer. He's the lead officer in the Northwest. He said that the city is under siege. I'm quoting him. He said, the city's under siege. And I said to him, well, if the city's under siege, tell the person who's complaining about not being able to get through with a wheelchair to stay off the street if the city's under siege. It's not the time to be sending code enforcement for these ridiculous issues right now. I think we need police protection down there. If they're going to tell the businesses that they're on their own and they have to take things into their own hands, that's a horrible answer to receive from business owners. Okay. Poor planning.
Damon Meeks,
I think we're worried about optics.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask Damon Meeks what you make of the situation last weekend and this weekend, and you can respond to some of what Silvano said there. Go ahead.
So last weekend, my family and I, we joined the rally. We were downtown at about 1 o'clock, and it went till 4 or so, and we were present at MLK Park. We were present at the public safety building. We marched with the community, and it was quite peaceful. Later on that evening, when we made it home, we saw the looting and the things taking place on the news. The next morning, 8 a.m., up first thing in the morning and volunteering and helping, you know, the business clerks, the different businesses throughout the community and restoring their establishments. And I think as it relates to the challenges that we see in our community, we have to have real conversations with members of our community. And I take my hat off to those of the Yemen community, a number of those business owners. Some of them were present. I heard someone ask a question like, oh, you were present or you couldn't stop them or why didn't you shoot anyone? I thank you for recognizing that, hey, these are material things and putting the right processes in order to assure that your insurance and things of that nature are in order. And, you know, you lost some material things that you can get back. But a commitment to people and recognizing life as valuable, that means a lot to this community. So my hat goes off to the Yemen community, who are the owners of a number of the stores within the community, for not retaliating and feeling a need to pull a gun and try to hurt someone. We've seen that happen before historically. Also, just think back to our ancestors and the fights that took place throughout the history of the United States for us to have certain rights, because there were a time where we couldn't stand out and protest even peacefully without reprisal or retaliation. So I'm thankful for that. I think that there's a need for us to come together as a community and talk through the issues and the concerns. And we have to, like, really look at the policies in place. We have to change some of these policies. We have to commit to limiting the force of the police department, period, as it relates to chokeholds and other practices. When you look at police departments across this nation, on average, an officer spends about 58 hours training to shoot and 8 hours on de-escalation. That practice must change, and that's how we change the energy that comes about. That's how we change the rage that comes about when it relates to police brutality throughout this community and other communities throughout this country.
Talking to Damon Meeks and Silvano Orsi, who are running for the 137th District Assembly seat. They are Democrats running in the primary on June 23rd. That's a seat that's long been held by David Gant here. So, Damon and Silvano, let me ask you, I'll start with you, Damon, this time. Give me your sense for what needs to happen in the short term and then what could happen in the long term. So in the short term, we're talking about ways that we can see these protests maybe bear fruit, but also, to the points that both of you have raised, stay focused on the issues at hand, that we can separate the protest from the property destruction. And then again, I'm not correlating one thing or another. I understand the distinction and the separation there, but I am curious to know what you think needs to happen perhaps this weekend and going forward. And then long term, Damon, you mentioned chokeholds. Are there other issues as well that you think can happen, especially at the state level, given that you're running for state office? Damon?
Yeah, I mean, there can be a number of things implemented. When you look at the fact that you have federal programs like the federal 1033 program, where military weapons are transferred to police departments, and that takes place basically by police departments making such deals. I personally believe that those should be things that come to a vote by way of legislature or even a referendum of sort, where the community gets to have a voice. But I definitely feel that it should take place by way of legislation, being able to vote. City council, county ledge, state government should be able to vote on those type of things. It shouldn't just be a backroom deal as to we're going to use these type of this type of equipment and police in our community. I think in the meantime, we have to look at opportunities. There's a rally taking place today. We have to use that as an opportunity. When I looked at different cities throughout the nation, you have some cities where the police department took a knee in solidarity and said, hey, listen, we don't agree with the actions that took place regarding the death of George Floyd. And we want to work with y'all and look at how we can possibly change these practices. You know, personally, I mean, I've never been in a situation where I had to, you know, shoot someone, but I'm quite sure that that plays a part, and it could possibly bring about a level of PTSD to an officer or someone that was in that predicament. So this not only protects the community, but it would also protect the officers. So I think in the meantime, we have to, as leaders in the community, we have to take advantage of a rally and have a voice and speak from your heart and not so much the position. If our leaders spoke from their heart, I'm quite sure we would have stories such as, you know, there were nights where I was fearful that, you know, my significant other would not make it home because he's a black man or she's a black woman, and I was fearful for their safety and their livelihood. So I think there's a need for real conversations from the heart, and we can have those conversations at these rallies. and we can engage the community and speak truth to power and move forward together.
All right, Silvano.
Yes, I think I got to get right to the point here and give you some straight answers instead of beating around the bush. I think what's going on here is people need to start using calm and use their head and exercise peaceful protest. I'm all for that. I understand the message that Black Lives Matter movement wants to convey, and I appreciate it, and I understand it very much. Here's the thing. If we're going to take up the cause for equality and justice for everyone, that means everyone. Why are we destroying immigrant-founded neighborhoods like the Little Italy District and the Clinton Corridor founded by Puerto Rican migrants? I think that doesn't make sense. That's not the way to deliver the message. If we're going to take up the cause for equal justice and equality for everyone, that means everybody. And we have to understand that destroying an immigrant neighborhood, immigrants also suffered prejudice here in the United States in recent times as well. And it doesn't make sense to destroy their livelihood in their neighborhoods. As far as the chokeholds, I'm thinking of introducing legislation, actually taking action. We have to introduce legislation that prohibits chokeholds and the training that's being implemented for chokeholds. I'm thinking of introducing that and writing that and presenting it to some of the folks in the legislature now. We have to take action. We can't be passive. If it's the chokeholds that we don't want to see anymore, we need to introduce legislation that will prohibit the training for chokeholds and the use of chokeholds in the state at the state level, and that will descend down into the city level. That would be our job as a legislator to protect folks. And also, I think right now the police have to respond when two businesses call and say that their livelihood is on the line. These people invested thousands of dollars in the neighborhoods, and we have to protect our neighborhoods. And I said the police should be responding, should be there, and protecting these business owners and businesses. From what I understand down there in that area, the protest today, I don't know if it's going to be a rally or a protest. I heard DeMond say the word rally. I heard the news say protest. If it's going to be a protest, we've seen what's been happening with the protests. Law enforcement needs to step up and protect the businesses down there. And if we request a car to be in front of two high-impact businesses like a pawn shop and a liquor store, the police should be there, and the mayor shouldn't be worried about optics and what it looks like that our city is under siege and that the police are in the street. That's a de facto result of these protests right now.
But Silvano, if the city is under siege, who is doing the sieging? I mean, like, who do you blame?
You have to ask you have to ask the police that. They're the ones who use that quote. They're the ones who told me today that the police is under siege. Obviously, they're referring to the protesters. They're worried just as much as we are about the violence and the looting and the rioting.
But are you conflating, Silvano, the looting and the protesting? Do you think that's the same people?
The looting and the protesting? Sure. Yep, that's happening. The protesters are the ones rioting in the street and breaking in. And I think it's an easy cop-out to say that they're outside agitators. I don't believe that's totally the case. And if there are outside people, why haven't we apprehended them and instead of just taking pictures of them? You know, a picture to me doesn't prove anything.
Okay.
It's very easy to say somebody from outside is agitating this and causing all this problem. It's not our residents.
No. Mayor Warren walked that back last Saturday or last Sunday. What she says what she means is it's people outside the Black Lives Matter movement. These are not legitimate protesters who are also throwing bricks through windows and stealing shoes and liquor.
Okay, why have we apprehended these people? Why are we continuing to let them agitate? That's the argument.
Okay.
I would like to chime in.
Yes, DeMond, please.
I'm listening to Silvano, and I just have to ask you this question. Does Black Lives Matter?
Yes, sir. I agree with that very much.
Okay, because I heard you say that. I hear the message they're trying to convey. And I was at the rally last week, Saturday, and no, I did not participate in any looting or destruction of property. However, I did participate in the cleanup process. I did show up
to
my Yemen brothers and sisters and speak life into them and tell them that we stand with you all and we're going to help you get back on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
we're
like
if you
have to be part of the solution. It's one thing to talk about, and it's another thing to put the feet on the ground and get the work done. And that's what we're committed to. That's what we've done as a representative for 1199, representing over 800 healthcare workers. Speaking of
I was down there on the Lyle Corridor. DeMond, I was down there in the Lyle Corridor last night making a call to calm and to peace. I understand there are peaceful protesters, but there are also residents from the city who are participating in this and getting involved and breaking into buildings, breaking into businesses and stealing things. And I was down there making a call to peace and telling folks we shouldn't be doing that in the immigrant neighborhoods. It doesn't make sense. These are people that have been harmed as well by prejudice.
I agree. We can't hurt our neighborhoods. I don't recognize immigrant neighborhoods. I recognize them as citizens of the Rochester community, as part of the Rochester community. So, I mean, if you look at our communities, they're quite diverse. So we're all one Rochester.
That's right, but you don't agree that some of these neighborhoods have been founded by immigrants? There's a great history in the Lyle Corridor and the Clinton Corridor for the Puerto Rican migrants that moved in there and that founded those neighborhoods over 100 years ago, and they did a lot to build those up. They built the buildings. They actually went in there and founded those neighborhoods. They built churches and institutions
We've established a Rochester community. And speaking about the Rochester community, I just want to say thank you to the essential workers, those who have continued to be on the front line. I thank you. I represented them over at 1199 SEIU. And one of the things that I've seen over the past few days is the back and forth at the county level regarding $500,000 for 6 jobs that will be appointed. And I'm not in agreement with it. Kudos to Adam Bello for pushing forward with a veto, because I've seen essential workers who have struggled to maintain their job and keep their families afloat when there was issues of daycare. And they went to the county for more daycare assistance and they couldn't get that assistance. And that $500,000 could have helped thousands of families in the Rochester community with providing daycare. And in turn, those essential workers could get to work and assist those seniors throughout these facilities. So I think those are the things that we need to push and we need to advocate for. And if the community is saying no,
that's a great point.
I don't see no reason why we couldn't have had a referendum. We have an election right around the corner. We could have pushed that for a referendum vote, opposed to those doing something in their own interest and protecting their cronies and giving their friends jobs. It's not even civil service opportunities. I don't agree with that.
The point, these are 2 points. The point on the essential workers is a great point, DeMond. I agree, and we have to do things to help essential workers and essential businesses, and that's why I organized a PPE giveaway event on Lyle Avenue where I got a company to donate. A company called 3G donated $6,000 worth of PPE to me and the Little Italy Association, and we gave it away to the essential workers and businesses on Lyle Avenue. If we're going to talk about actually doing things, I was down there and I contracted the coronavirus and I was in the hospital for 2 weeks afterwards. And I was on the front lines giving away PPE last week on Lyle Avenue myself. And
that's great. And I was on Lyle Avenue giving out PPE as well a couple of weeks ago. So, I mean, my hat goes off to you and I pray that, you know, as far as your recovery with COVID-19, I pray that goes well for you.
All right, so DeMond Meeks and Silvano Orsi are 2 of the 4 Democrats who are running in the primary. For June 23rd, it's the 137th District Assembly seat, longtime seat of David Gant in the New York State Assembly, who is retiring. There are 4 Democrats running, and 2 of them could not join us. Ernest Flagler Mitchell had an emergency today, could not join us this hour. Ann Lewis did not respond to the latest invitations, but we've got DeMond Meeks and Silvano Orsi, and you can hear they have some agreement and some disagreement on some pretty important issues in our community and for New York State business. Where after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back with them, and we're going to talk a lot more about what they'd like to do in Albany and how their views may differ or coalesce a little bit here. It's part of our ongoing effort to bring the candidates to you at length before June 23rd. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to Dr. Irshad Altheimer, the director of the Center for Public Safety Initiatives at RIT. His team did some research just last summer regarding police community relations. And now that research might have flown under the radar, but it seems all the more important now to understand the relationships, how to build them, what people actually want. We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So, DeMond Meeks, you said earlier this hour that you get a good pulse of the community, that you understand the community, you've had conversations with people from a lot of different walks of life, and you even mentioned, in your words, young men on the corner, talking to them about what's going on in their lives, understanding it. If I could, I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about what those conversations have revealed to you. But generally speaking, I know everyone's life is different, but why they're there, and what's led them there, and what how that's informed maybe how you'd like to act if you're in the New York State Assembly.
So looking at some of the things, like I talked to one young man, and he stands out in my mind because he said he went to Edison Tech initially because his family over the years had told him about trade opportunities. He wanted to take up a skilled trade at Edison Tech, and he said when he got there, they no longer had those type of programs. And what I often hear, and I heard this when I was in high school at John Marshall High School, I'm class of 97, and I would often hear people say things such as, all of our children are not going to college. And everyone who do go to college are not necessarily college ready. So with that being said, we have to look at ways to assure that we're setting our children up on the right path to be successful. I would push for resources for schools such as Edison Tech to bring back those vocational programs such as cosmetology, mechanics. They had a number of different programs. So I would push for resources to bring those type of programs back. So for those students who have already committed that, hey, you know what, I work well with my hands, I want to take up the construction trades, I want to become an electrician, a carpenter, a mason by trade, give them those opportunities so that way they can actually graduate high school and hit the ground running and provide for their families and make a life for themselves. I know students actually had a family member who were attending Webster Schroeder, and they were a junior in high school, and going into their senior year, they had a meeting with the counselor, and they had a real conversation about, hey, are you going to college? What's your plans? And they said, hey, we have this program that we're working with, BOCES, and your senior year, you can go to school part of the day, and you can take this skilled trade, and upon graduation, you'll have this trade, and you'll be set up with a job. And they were able to assist them with that. So I think that as it relates to those who are on the corner, we have to provide opportunities. And one of those opportunities I think we should push for, not only in our schools, but also to folks in the community, is skilled trades. For too long, they've been using felonies as a means to keep people out of opportunity. So if a person has a skilled trade, if we have a carpenter or a skilled mason by trade, their work can speak for itself, even if they make mistakes in their lives, and which caused them to have a felony on their record. They can still make a way for themselves and their family. So that's something that I will definitely support, is those resources to give individuals more opportunities.
Silvano Orsi, you've talked for a long time about improving life in communities and meeting people and understanding their struggles. What can New York State do? What do you want to do in Albany to help people?
I think we have to bring resources into the neighborhoods and revitalize neighborhoods in the city of Rochester. They're in such a poor condition. Neighborhoods and families need investment. I agree about the point about the trade schools. It's very important to not, college is not for everyone. And if we can teach a kid a trade and get him a job afterwards, it's very important. I agree with Damon about that. We have to bring resources into the neighborhoods and get the, we're at a critical point in Rochester right now with all the protesting going on, relationships that have to be built with the police. We have to strengthen the relationships with the police. We have to invest in the police department and build that up and give them strength. I don't think we should be limiting them as far as resources. We have to work on police community relationships. We have to build that. And we have to get money into the neighborhoods, get the schools back into the neighborhoods, get the faith leaders back into the neighborhoods. People are forgetting about our disciplines, our religions, and our faith. It's very important to get that into the neighborhoods. And we have to look at the churches and the institutions that we have in our neighborhoods and work on revitalization, public realm improvements, infrastructure improvements. We've got crumbling infrastructure in Rochester. We have to address that legislatively at the state level and get funding into the neighborhoods for revitalization. Now, there's too many problems with open drug trade going on in the Lyle Corridor and the Clinton Corridor that has to be addressed. And we have to work on that with the police department. That's the only way to solve that. And education. We have to educate each other about what these neighborhoods are, what their history is, what they mean to families, why people take such great pride in the businesses and the neighborhoods in the area. And again, that's going to require funding into the neighborhood revitalization projects. What I want to see is community projects being presented by the community, less projects being presented by big developers, more. We work as a state, we work with the community to teach people how to present a credible, viable project from the neighborhood associations and from the neighborhood groups. They know best what we need in the neighborhoods, and we need to get them prepared to be able to present a project to the community, and a viable project that could be funded by the state. And there are plenty of nonprofits and organizations in our neighborhoods that need investment,
okay,
and that could be helped out to be able to do that.
Silvano Orsi and Damon Meeks are two of the candidates in the Democratic primary for the 137th District Assembly seat that is now going to be vacant. The retiring David Gant has that seat opening up, and so voters have a chance on June 23rd to decide which of the candidates they'd like to send forward to the November general election. Damon, let me ask you, and I'll ask both of you. Damon, single-payer health care, New York Health Act. If you're in the New York State Assembly, what are your thoughts on health care and that particular proposal?
I am in support of health care for all. I feel that health care should simply be a right and not a privilege. And it's a major barrier. And when we talk about disparities, I mean, COVID-19 just put the exclamation mark on it. But there are too many disparities as it relates to health care. So it's my position that we push and we find the resources to assure universal health care for all in New York State.
Okay. Silvano Orsi, health care for all, single payer?
I support health care for all, just as Damon does. I think that's a right. And folks need to have health care. The strength of a community is, you know, without your health, you can do nothing. So I think people, that's a right. It's not a question. People should have health care, and I will fight for that, for health care for all, as a legislator. And I'll try to get the funding in place and the programs in place for that. I agree that people should have health care, and there should be no one left uncovered.
When it comes to paying for healthcare or education, we'll get to education in a moment here. But Silvano, Governor Cuomo has resisted calls from some Democrats to push for a supermillionaires tax or a high-level wealth tax to help pay or to at least help head off a crisis during this year of COVID-19 here. Would you support a supermillionaires tax or a high wealth tax?
No, I think our tax system is fine. I don't think we should be implementing socialistic ideas and trying to tax the wealthy for these programs. I don't support that at all. I think we have to find other ways to fund these programs that the governor wants. And taxing the wealthy, that sounds like a Bernie Sanders policy. That's something I would be against.
Okay, Damon.
Well, Bernie could have received my vote. As it relates to taxing the rich, I support a billionaire wealth tax in New York State. It's necessary. A tax on billionaires would create an assessment on a particular group of super rich individuals within this state. We often hear, you know, the threat. So if we tax, they'll leave. Well, they leave, but they make their money here in New York State. So the money they make here in New York State will be taxed. And studies show that a wealth tax on billionaires would generate upwards of $10 billion more per year. We have to stop funding the state on the backs of the working class. We should also push for ultra-millionaires tax. I'm in support of a millionaires tax and a tiered millionaires tax. If you're, you know, bringing in $5 million a year, that would be one level of the tax. $10 million, another level, and so on and so forth. So I am definitely in support of raising taxes on the super rich New Yorkers in order to assure that we maintain and implement needed programs. As it relates to that, I'm also an advocate. I fought for the campaign for fiscal equity. I know that the state still owes a number of the school districts, including the Rochester City School District, money, and we have to fight and advocate for those resources and bring them home. So absolutely, I support a wealth tax here in New York State.
All right, so there's a point of difference between the candidates. Demond, when it comes to education, you touched on it, some of it there. What's your first priority in Albany if you win this seat and you can go to Albany? What do you want to see happen with education?
When we win this seat, we're definitely going to advocate for proper funding of education. And we're also going to look at implementing programs that will be beneficial to children. In meeting with the teachers union, one of the things that I mentioned was we talk about the students and we often mention teachers, but one thing that tends to be missing in the equation is parents. And I think that we need to make sure that we have parents engaged in the process. Parents who are voters, payers who are taxpayers, being engaged in the process and advocating and saying, hey, we need to improve the school system to the benefit of our children. And that's our position. We're going to fight. We're going to work with the students. We're going to work with teachers. We're going to work with parents. And we're going to talk to what the issues are. And we're going to work together to improve the current school system.
Silvano Orsi, on education, what would be your priority in Albany?
My priority would be accountability. I think we have to have a conversation in Rochester and get down to the bottom of why we're in these big deficits and we've got these big budget gaps that's happening right now. From what I understand, the past superintendent, her administration was allowed to overhire teachers with the belief that hiring teachers would improve graduation rates, and it didn't. And that's why we see a big deficit right now. And we're talking about teacher cuts and all that kind of stuff. I think folks have to be held accountable. There's, you know, it might not be an answer to have a monitor the monitors, the board, the school board. That's what's being pitched right now. We have to take a look at that. And I agree, getting families involved. Parents have to be involved in conversation because they know best what their students need, what their children need. And right now we're seeing a big deficit in Rochester. We do need the funding. We do need the money in the district to protect our students and give them the right resources. But we also need accountability. I don't think the board is being held accountable the way it should be right now. I see there was many errors committed, overhiring and that kind of stuff, overspending that may have caused the budget gaps. And again, there needs to be a proper checks and balance system in Rochester for our school district to be held accountable for what happened, and what's caused the big problems here at the education system.
Well, it sounds to me like...
Evan,
Demond. Go ahead. No, go ahead, Demond.
I just want to also touch on, like, one of the first orders of the business and going to Albany will be to make sure that our children are brought up to even playing field and beyond as it relates to technology. Because that was one of our major challenges with the onset of COVID-19. A number of our students just did not have the technology in order to learn from home. So we need to make sure that we bring the resources, those who need computers or are, notepads to do their work on. We want to make sure that they have access to that. And also those communities where, you know, the resources may not be as affluent. We need to make sure that our students have access to Wi-Fi, have access to internet within their communities so that teachers can continue to teach them even when they're not in the classroom. So that would be beneficial during COVID-19, and it would also be beneficial if things were back to normal as far as students going to school every day and being able to assess the teacher offline with assistance with their homework.
All right, let me follow up with Silvano and maybe get both of you on this, though, because Silvano talked about holding the school board accountable. And without specifics, that's just a platitude. Right now, do you mean the monitor that was put into the budget? Are you talking about what was debated last year, a state takeover? What do you want to see, Silvano?
I don't want to see a state takeover. I'd rather see the monitor. But I think we have to think about, is that the right answer for our district, having a monitor, our monitors, the board, which is the board? Is that really going to solve the problem? I agree about the resources. We have to have the right resources in place for our students. they need access to PCs and computers and any technology that they need. And Rachel Barnhart had made a great proposal one time when she was running for mayor. She was talking about broadband access for all folks in the city and students. That's very important. I think everyone needs access to the internet in the city, and I'll fight for something like that if I were elected. I can't stress enough, we do need the resources. I'll fight for the resources for students. They have to have the right funding in our school district and our budget. We have overspent. We have not been held accountable for the overspending the way we should be. I think we have to look at where the errors occurred and get some answers to the community and get the answers to the parents, and then get the right resources in place to help the students. That's the solution. And a legislator has to fight for that. I don't want to see a state takeover. Okay. I don't think that's the answer.
Okay. Damon, how about you? Do we have Damon? Damon, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, there you are.
Yes,
okay.
I'm there. Yeah, I'm just listening to Silvano. I just wonder, like, if his background was in the district attorney's office as it relates to prosecution, because it's like every method is, okay, we have to enforce. Where's the love, brother?
There's love there. There's also, okay, you know, you have to be responsible as a legislator. There has to be accountability when we start writing laws, start legislating policies and public policy. There has to be accountability attached. You know, everybody's pushing for accountability with the police accountability board and those kind of things, but then they want to be lax with the rules as far as the school board and resources. Millions of dollars are on the line here coming from the state, and that doesn't just come off trees. You know, there has to be accountability attached to that. There's the love.
So as it relates to the school district, I am not in support of a state takeover. I do believe that we have to do our due diligence as a community to make sure that we're educating parents on the issues, and also making sure that people are actively engaged in the voting process. We should be out there full throttle doing voter registration. As a organizer with 1199, as an organizer, former organizer with 1199, as well as the Poor People's Campaign, that was one of the things that we were called to do: get out, educate people on issues, and make sure that we were registering people to vote. And the reality of it is, when you look at the political system, all too often the focus is simply prime voters. We're just going to focus on this core group, and we think that, you know, we can win by focusing on this core group. But we're not taking time to educate people on issues and make sure that folks who are normally just not engaged have an opportunity to get engaged in the process.
Well, let's talk about that, Damon, because this
hey,
week.
Evan.
Well, hold on there, Silvano. I'll let you respond, but I want to follow that point. It's important.
Well, I want to ask a question because he was allowed to ask me.
Okay,
a question.
Okay, go ahead.
I should be allowed, right? It would be fair.
Go ahead, Silvano.
I have a question for my brother, Damon, here. He's talking about building relationships and being in touch with the community. I've been pretty active down in the Lyle Corridor and the Clinton Corridor for the past several years, and I attend almost all the neighborhood meetings, the NOMAS meetings, and the neighborhood associations, get-togethers, the groups, their events, their public events, and those kind of things. If Damon is talking about being in touch with the community and being on the ground and building relationships, how come I haven't seen him at any of the neighborhood association meetings in the Lyle Corridor,
I've been in the Lyle area, Silvano, let him talk.
Let him talk. Go ahead, Damon.
I want to finish my question as well, if I can. No, well, okay. Well, we understand that you're going to advocate for Lyle and you're going to advocate for Clinton. We're going to advocate for the full 137. We're going to advocate for Monroe County. We're going to advocate for Rochester. We're going to advocate for New York. And that's what our track record shows. That's what our track record shows. When the governor proposed cutting $500 million to healthcare last year, we mobilized members from the community as well as the unions. And we went to Albany, over 10,000, and we pushed back against that $500 million in cuts. And we were successful in doing so. So this isn't about just one particular corridor. This is about this community at large. This is about the state of New York. So I understand you represent Clinton. I understand you represent Lyle. And, you know, the city council, You have, you know, people that represent.
Well, I don't represent
throughout
those
the city council. You may be interested in.
You're sticking
in
words
considering
in my,
city council.
You're sticking words in my mouth, and that's not correct. I don't represent just Delisle and Clinton. I will fight for the entire 137th district. These are focus areas that I think I pointed out that need attention in our city. They're two vital corridors, probably the two most needy corridors that need attention. And I'm being very specific with my approach. On the contrary to what you're saying here, you're trying to generalize everything. I'm being very specific. We need to attack the Delisle corridor and the Clinton corridor. These are two vital corridors that are the most needy corridors in our city right now, where the open
drug trade, where the opioid crisis
originated. Let me finish talking, please.
Those are two of multiple areas. You didn't mention Jefferson Avenue. You didn't mention Joseph Avenue. Now, one thing that I will commit to is working with you.
That doesn't mean that I won't working with those, these areas.
And working with those communities as well. So we're not going to look at it just with it. Go ahead, Savannah.
What I'm saying is I'm being very specific about two corridors that I think need attention right now, where the opioid crisis is being generated on the Clinton corridor and the Lyle area, where all the violence is happening and where there's delinquency. For years, these areas have been neglected for 40 years from our past assemblyman's administration, and they need attention right now. They need revitalization. And they're breeding the drug problem that we're seeing and the crime problem in our city. And I'm trying to be very specific and focused here on two areas. That's why I mentioned Lyle and Clinton. I think those areas need attention right now. We have to focus, handle one place at a time in our city, and we fight for the whole community. But if we're thinking about the whole community, we have to see where these crime problems are originating and attack those areas. That's my philosophy.
Okay. So you've definitely made that point. Damon, go ahead now.
I just think, like, you know, Savannah often speaks about enforcing. And when we're talking about the opioid crisis, when we're talking about drug addiction, period, I mean, we can't police ourselves out of these type of situations. We have to make sure that we get the social programs that are needed in our community to assist with these efforts. We need counselors. We need folks who can assist with mental health issues. I've had a really good friend of the family who struggled for years, and their family actually tried to have the individual arrested under the mental hygiene law. And a response from the police department was, he's not causing any bodily harm to himself or anyone else, so we can't arrest him under the mental hygiene law. But then the same individual stayed outside in the elements, even on cold blue days, and was so cold to the point that they had to get parts of their fingers removed due to frostbite. And when you get to the point where you don't recognize that you're in harm's way, even as it relates to the elements outside, someone should be able to assist and get you the help that's needed in that time. Because who knows a person's mental state better than their family, who's saying, hey, please help us, help him. So I think that we need to look at bringing in resources to assist those families and assist those community members with those different levels of mental health and get them the help they need as it relates to drug addiction, opposed to trying to police ourselves out of a bad situation.
Two candidates, and as we wrap, let's get their website since we're out of time. Silvano Orsi, people want to learn more about you. Where do they need to go?
It's silvanoorsi.com, and I think it's incorrect to try to characterize what I'm saying as enforcement. It's not just about enforcement. I've actually been down on the ground and implemented social programs and programs that help the needy and the challenged folks in these areas. Again, I'm going to
www.demonmeeks.com.
Hold on, everybody. SilvanoOrsi.com. Damon Meeks, let's do your website. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, it's votedamonmeeks.com. I don't only just go into those neighborhoods. I live those neighborhoods. And thank God for my mom and that civil service opportunities that allowed her to fight her way up through poverty. So votedamonmeeks.com. Again, votedamonmeeks.com. Thank you, Evan, for having us on today, and have a blessed day.
Demond and Silvano, it takes a lot to run for office. Thank you for taking the time to be with us, and we hope
I'd like to make my final point.
Silvano, you've got a chance to make all kinds of points if people want to follow you on your website, but we appreciate Silvano, Demond. We did reach out to Ernest Flagler Mitchell and Ann Lewis. Couldn't get them today, but those are the candidates in the 137th. More coming up.